not adjust your radio frequency. This is not a test. This is the Artist First Network. Cool.
Welcome to another broadcast of Bigfoot Central on the Artist First Radio Network. We accept email questions and comments through our email box, dj@artistfirst.com. Click on the icons to follow along with the photographs we're going to be offering on tonight's broadcast. And now here are your hosts, M.K. Davis and Don Monroe.
Good evening.
Hey,
Don. How are you doing this evening?
Well, I'm out here with Bob and Patty Reinhold of the Western Bigfoot Society. I'm in their home as a guest. And I'm doing some paperwork. Anyway, I'm doing research here in the area, but it's exciting because what I've discovered recently has been out of this world in some respect, but not related to this exactly, but something of more. But I'm out here in Oregon right now, and I just came across Washington and interviewed some people on what they call Bigfoot encounters, and then meet a wild man. But anyway, that's been real interesting. That's all I'm doing.
Hey, Don, let me ask you a question. How far is Oregon? How far is Oregon, the Oregon border, from Bluff Creek?
Not that far. I could get there in 3 hours if I drove right, well, 2.5. I could get there in 3 hours if I allow the road conditions, of course. But, yeah, 3 hours to take it down there.
Well, but it's a tank full of gas, maybe?
Yeah, in my car, a good tank. But, I mean, it depends. I haven't figured an actual miles, but I think just off the top of my head here, it's within 300, within 2.5. I'd have to look at the map.
The reason I asked that question is that there was a man some few years ago who, in a cave in Oregon, you know, people ask, and the tonight show is going to be about the bones. Where are the bones? Where are Bigfoot bones? Why do we never find any Bigfoot bones? And the answer to that, and the way we're going to address that question is with images. The fact is that Bigfoot bones quite likely have been and continue to be turned up. And the question is, you know, why are people even asking the question if there are Bigfoot bones, you know, out there? Because the answer to that is because they don't never see the light of day.
Well, you see, M.K., just review on a little bit. If you consider the first Neanderthal was discovered about the 1850s, about that time, and it was 40 years before anybody reported something similar in the Java Man about 1890s, memory. That's 40 years span, and during that time, things appeared quite often. And the scientist Jeffrey Goodman, from memory, wrote about 1980 somewhere, 82 or 3 somewhere, that one of the reasons he thought that was not ever reported because the scenario of acceptance for human evolution was not in the program for the thinkers of the times. And so Darwin wrote his original report on the origin of the species about 1859 or 60, somewhere in there, and in the middle of all that, and that's interesting to think about that, how things, many things show up and are never claimed as anything important to anybody.
Well, if you go to the Artist First homepage and click on the Bigfoot Central tab there, it'll take you to a page where you can see some photos of what quite likely might be a Sasquatch skull, or could be a Sasquatch skull. And this man found this skull, and he's found two in the years that he's looked, he searched these caves in Oregon. Now, these skulls are not typical skulls like of Homo sapiens. They have a heavy brow ridge and a sloping forehead and look very Neanderthalish. And one of them looks a little more than the other. The problem with these skulls is that this man, no matter where he took them, could not get any attention for them from academia. And the reason why is because they fit the look of archaic, old-world, Neanderthalish type skulls. And they've already adopted the idea or the textbook. It's in the textbooks that there were no Neanderthals in the New World. So rather than rewrite a textbook, they just didn't look at it. You know, I used to work with a guy, and he said, "Well, we got a problem over here." And he says, "Well, he says, somebody says, well, when you look at it," and he just says, "Well, don't look at it, and it won't be a problem." So it's sort of that way. Don't look
no,
at.
No, okay. Along those lines, you know, the teeth are very important in these skulls and the size. And you know, people don't maybe all know. I didn't know until I read about it recently in a journal. But the Ainu of Japan, which are hairy people of sorts, and they're not Japanese as we know them. They're actually, I think it's a Jomon people. They're ancient people. They have the smallest teeth in the world, and in the comparisons, the biggest teeth are probably the Aboriginals of Australia. And this is interesting because of the teeth in Polly's skulls that they find are sometimes relative, and no one realizes that the depth of the teeth in the skull as well, in the jawbone, tells a lot about their lineage in animal husbandry, call it that. So, you know, the teeth in the Jardar skull of Obscurian, somewhere in France, probably locked up, never been assayed yet to know what that really is. They just put it aside in the trash basket, you know?
Well, if you go in a cave in Oregon and you find a skull like this, be very careful who you let look at it or who you send it to.
That's right.
Because if it's a person who has written any kind of texts or any kind of papers and it don't agree with what he's written, it might not show back up again. It might be worse lost than it was while it was in the cave, even destroyed. Unfortunately, there are people out there that will do this. Now, this was from a book called Early Man in Oregon, and I got a copy of this from Ray Crow. As a matter of fact, Ray's wanting it back, and I'm fixing to have to send it back to him, and I wanted to do a show before I did. So that people could look at this extraordinary skull and discuss it a little bit. This was found in a cave in Oregon, and it was dated. This man went and had it carbon dated, paid for it himself. He had two skulls that he found over a period of years. He had one older one that was 3,500 years old, and this one right here at the top here was 1,500 years old, or 1,550, I think, give or plus or minus 50 years. So, not that outstandingly old. You know, you have a cave, a cave in Oregon, in America, that's got a Neanderthal-like skull that's not that old. What does that tell you, Don?
Well, I'm comparing what you're saying without seeing it to the Sitka of Nevada. That's overlooked a lot of times down in the hands right now of Pansy Lee Larson down there. I know her, and Ruth Tipton is the examination person for the museum. The Sitka skulls have been long known as nicknamed Redheaded Giants of Nevada, and there's much story there, and it's overlooked. But you've got to realize, MK, what you're talking about here, what I'm talking about collectively, that the scientists, the academics, don't have that written when they go to the journal to dispute it. So the new discoveries are always cast aside. Unless there have been four or five opinions or the copycat, no one gets credit for anything. But these Sitka people, you're there, same locality, same area.
Yeah, you almost have to force the issue, and if you're not a scientist, you don't have the clout to do that, which is what happened to this man, Ray Dickerson.
Ray Dickerson's discovery is right there in Oregon, close by in Nevada. It's right along, adjacent to it, right there in line.
Well, not
I know
that far.
No, they're not that far away. I mean, this is 200 miles probably from there.
I've got an alleged Sitka skull posted down there. I think it's, let me count the number down, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's the fifth image down, Sitka skull. Now, this skull is most likely the one that was, a whole entire mummy was pulled from Lovelock Cave in between the digs of Llewellyn Loud. Llewellyn Loud was digging there with a man from the Smithsonian Institution, and when they took a break, the townspeople came in there and found this, it was a mummy to start out with. And they took it, and they boiled it down and boiled all the meat off the bones until there was nothing but a skull left. And they made a porridge with that water and drank it as an initiation ceremony for some kind of organization they had. I'm not sure if it was Masons or who, but...
it was affiliated with the Skull and Trust Cult Society.
It didn't say that in the book. It was
no, that's why I assume it was. Now, there's I got a paper article on that from 1800s in my collection somewhere. I memorized it. Didn't memorize it, but I mean, I remember that issue.
Well, it could
didn't
be.
Say it conclusively, but it indicated that.
The book that I got it out of was the one that you loaned me, Don. It was Stone Age in the Great Basin by Emory Strong, and he talks about mm-hmm. how they took that and boiled it down. Well, this is most likely the guy right here. And the skull, if you look at it, is quite similar with the heavy brow ridges and the sloping forehead.
MK, does that show the skeleton profile? I don't know what picture you have, but the one I have in my mind, I looked at a lot of times, and it's the profile held, you know, profile to you. The angle of the skull and the jaw below, which is deeper in bone matter than ours, but it's so human-like, it's absolutely not a thing with that heavy brow ridge you mentioned, but it's similar, but it's a different one. But they're in the same proximity.
Well, we've been called lots of things during the ages there, Don. You know, the human family, they've had different names. Sapien has not always been our name. They try to describe us and with one, you know, one word. Homo, we're in the division of Homo, and then they use a one-word description of us. And they've tried different things, and they didn't feel like they were adequate, so they adopted sapien. And all sapien means is wise. So we're Homo sapien means wise man. In other words, we're supposed to be smarter than anything else around, and some people may differ with that, but that's the way we're supposed to be, and that's our description. But if you're in the genus Homo, then you're a human. And nobody knows how wise these people were that, you know, that owned these skulls way back when, but they tested the cranium size. You know how they do that, Don? How they check the size of a cranium? It's kind of low tech. They take bird seed of all things, and they fill the cranium, and then they measure the bird seed. How much bird seed?
Bird seed.
Yeah, and they measure the cranium of this skull here, and it's a really good match for a Neanderthal. Cranium size-wise. So you got a really good match for Neanderthal, brow ridges, cranium, sloping forehead. Now the question is, what's it doing there? If they weren't here, what's it doing there? Because clearly it had not been disturbed in a long time. You know, these people experienced a lot of frustration. I mean, they considered it to be important, and they paid for out of their pockets for a lot of the stuff that was done to it. But to their chagrin, you know, the scientific establishment didn't really care.
Did you ever read Ivan T. Sanderson's article with the Argosy magazine of 1969, probably a May edition, I think it was, of his descriptions of the alleged to be Iceman of Wisconsin?
Oh,
and
no,
how he describes the human attributes of the skull, especially in the face and everything. And it's like you said in your report, you can read it, anybody can read it, it's available. And it tells how he's adamant about that. He said that he was just, you know, that he had the answer right there to his own liking. And, you know, what anybody wants to think about that afterwards or even now. They call him Bozo, and you know, was that they referred to him in that block of ice they had there for a long time on, I think a couple of years on the sideshows, and until he was called in finally. And I think Bernard was the one that photographed that. And
Bernard Hoogelman.
That guy. He went ahead and filmed that, and the two of them worked together, and
now this wasn't a skull. It was an actual
importance. I happen to have I have my little carry on here. I've got a full report available. Anybody can get it. You want to write it down? Anybody out there? It can be had from Belgium, and it's called Homo Pongoides. That's Pongoides. It refers to apes and gorillas too. It says up in INE, it says ape-like man, that's in parentheses. And the bulletin is available from the Royal Institute of Natural Science of Belgium. It's volume number 45, number 4. So I haven't got one. I want to get one of those one of these days. I've got around to it. But that'd be something to read because it's supposed to be a DNA assessment, also anatomy from scientific approach at that time. No one's ever heard about this since. I've never heard about it since, but that's where you can get it at. I dug it up.
Well, you know, if you go down a few images, you'll go down below the Sitka skull, one that says Othello, down to Oregon book quote. And this is a page from the book these two men wrote. And they talked about how that they had two different skulls of 3,500 and 1,500 years old. Both have archaic traits that in their combinations establish each of these individuals as representing species different from each other and different from all previously reported hominids. If they are considered to be American Indians, then it is prime evidence that those people originated here and did not come from Asia or any other place. Now, this is what the man said, and a lot of times people will, when writing, and Don, you've been a writer, so you know, you spill your guts sometimes in ink and paper. They said, a major problem in any investigation of early man is that most people already have the answers with which they are satisfied.
Right.
All findings are manipulated to fit their preordained conclusions.
Yeah, it's just like playing cards. You shuffle the deck and you wipe your sleeve, you know.
But, and you're all excited. You found a skull with brow ridges and everything matches. You know, like a hominid from here or there, and you go rushing up, and you wonder why these people are blowing you off.
Yeah.
You know,
you might compare it to modern times and the Kennewick man here a lot too long ago, and I got a new one discovered here in that area down here somewhere. I've been running across where, but I heard that rumor yesterday. They're doing something like it and probably the same thing, and they bury the first one under tons of rocks, what I last heard. But, you know, the people don't want to know the truth sometimes because it rocks their boat, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, you know,
can write 1,000 pages and only use 300 in the book, and the rest of it's more important. They didn't put it out.
You know, it goes back to that Lovelock Cave thing. You know, they got over 10,000 artifacts. Those artifacts didn't all make it even to museums. They found duck decoys on a man's mantle in Florida that came out of that cave.
Also in Carson City, Nevada, too. In Carson City, right now, there's some down there. But
Llewellyn Loud and the other fellow, which I keep forgetting his name, a young guy, they cashed some of it in.
Well, just to lighten you on that, we just might have some more information in a few months if I get down to Vatican. I told you the tip I had at MKU personally, but we may have something going on that if we get lucky. It might be a big, big lucky thing if we get that.
Yeah, Don, you remember we talked about that big mummy that was on display there for many years.
Yeah,
so,
that's what I'm referring to. I got to tell you, folks, just a little bit of a story. I met a man in Montana. He was having a beer. He happened to be the son of the father I knew, who's dead now, who I sell artifacts to down there. Not that kind of artifacts. I sold him wall hangers for things for the Western Museum. And it just happened, we got talking, and I was a guy his dad referred to, who had come there asking about this lead skeleton and long ago, and that's part of the story. Anyway, I don't know what will happen here. He's invited us down to take a look and try to dig it up again from somewhere around that area. Might happen.
Oh, well, yeah, if we get the right kind of break, though, Don. But say we do find it, and what are we going to do with it?
Well, who's going to believe it? I mean, we'll get some academic thing that, you know.
Well, where are you going to take it, Don? Give us what happened.
My house.
You know.
Come on to my house. Yeah. Oh, I can tell you. I got so much junk now around there, they wouldn't look at it. I don't even, that matters a bit. They wouldn't be, it'd be safe. No one would steal it from me.
Well, if you look down just below that where we just read that quote, in the web page there, the next page, picture down, Oregon skull petty comparison. Look at that. I mean, just take a long look at it. Now, you're talking about one tank of gas between the two, distance-wise.
Yeah, a good one, yeah.
And, my goodness, you know, it looks like if you drape some skin and over some hair, it would just almost look like it. The bones and the brow ridges and the sloping forehead. You know, what? I sit here and look at it, and I think, you know, where are the bones?
They've always been there. That's been assessed so many times. I'm not going to elaborate here, but I've written a whole chapter, maybe two, a bit on a book I hope to put out someday, on bones themselves, what we've found in the caves in different places that disappeared after we examined them. And it's very strange, and how it's, you feel like something watching you, sort of like you feel that, because you come back and they're gone, and they've been there for hundreds of years. And you don't desecrate what you found, because it's obvious why you won't, when you come back, they're gone. And this happened to me, and it's been, I got witnesses to this in numbers, and it's just a crazy thing. The bones disappear. When you examine bones in caves, and you don't take them out, if you're licensed to do that, you come back, they're not there usually. And I don't know what happens, it's just it's an anomaly I can't explain. But,
so you got a possibility, two possibilities I see, Don. If you just found someone like Patty there, dead, and you took her to town, you got two possibilities I see. You got a possibility of being totally ignored.
Yeah, you get
or
that.
You got a possibility of going to jail.
That's right, you get that too. In fact, there's a story that Ron Roseman knows, and he's another investigator out here. I saw Ron 2 days ago. And we talked about that same incident. I won't go into it. But we had found one time something in a cave. We didn't dare tell the feds about it. Anyway about it. And I got pictures to this day. I could. But if I did, because of my age, they might say we returned to the scene of the crime. And you might stumble on anything in a cave. It could be anything. And they can tie you to it. The way things are nowadays, they're not enforcing the law. They're enforcing their ego trip. You don't know what's going to happen to you. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think I do.
You're reluctant to tell people what you know sometimes because, first, number one, they won't believe you, and number two, you don't want to prove it, and they know what they don't know already, so they know all about what they don't know, what you're going to do. You die with secrets, and then maybe 50 years later, they might say, well, maybe you knew something, you know?
Well, if it comes down to this, you wonder, the people that you pay, and we pay the salaries of most of these people, they go to state-run institutions, and they're subsidized by the state, or in some way our money gets to them. And yet we don't get our money back in competency. We purchased this man's expertise, or this woman, but we didn't purchase their ego. They need to hang that up. If you're wrong, I don't care if you got a PhD or not, or whether you spent 20 years writing about it and it didn't come out like you wanted. You're a man of science. You're supposed to go where the facts go.
People don't realize what investigation efforts people make out here. And I'm on one of them. I am afraid of that. I mean, there's a lot of them out there as good or better than I am at it, probably. But they're making their own separate solo trip, you might call it that. You fly across the Atlantic for the first time in your own airplane and never get even seen or heard about. So here we are. And this very week, and I told MK on the phone about some of my discoveries this week, and it's kind of incredible because it ties into the Sasquatch possibilities, or at least Wild Man in the Woods. And I got it, Becky Botello, and I mentioned her name before. She's in Washington State. I stopped in to see her and the family for a couple of hours, a whole afternoon. We went in the woods to a certain place she had. She found what she thought was where coffee had been laying down in some brush. I think there was a place that did do that. Heavily leaved and, the foliage, and you couldn't even see the tracks, but there was disturbance, definitely was a lot of it. And, you can't track an animal in leaves and get the definition to pour a cast. Not a way you can do that if you get it valid. But we found another peculiarity that was very, first time for me, had to do with holly berries. And the elevation is picked off the tree for about 50 yards or more. And, almost like a thoroughfare, as a marking their zone, different than a twist. Well, this is just one little thing I found this week, but it shows you how no one's going to believe holly berries have a thing to do with beating on trees or some nonsense on TV, airplanes flying in. That doesn't get it that way. That's not the way you find this wild man stuff.
You get
a claim on TV for it, but that's all you get.
I noticed this, and you tell me what you think. I noticed on this skull, if you look at the very top picture, you'll see two holes in the brow. And that's where the muscles attach for the brows, Now, that's when you raise an eyebrow, when you lower an eyebrow, that type of thing.
Right, that's
really, really large holes there for, in other words, they had a pretty big muscle there. So does that speak to you in any kind of way what does it tell you?
Well, this skull you're showing there, I don't see it, but has that skull got a bastion forehead? Or a cranium?
No, it's whole.
It's whole?
Yeah, it's whole.
Well, it's probably a male, but I don't mean it. I'm not an anatomist. I'm not the last word, but it tells you that there's not quite like ours. We haven't got that hole to that extent.
Yeah, it must be very, very expressive. That's what it tells
me. Actually, something like a dimple almost on their head, almost, you know.
Right. If it looked at you, it might substantially change its way its facial looks by raising its
Yeah, it's called dimorphism. You know, it might be that. You know, sexual dimorphism.
That look at you bug-eyed? You know, they open their eyes real wide.
I should say so.
Right. It takes a real strong muscle, above the eye to open those eyelids up that high. You know.
Every blonde kind of cowboy can do that.
You remember Marty Feldman, the comedian? You know, he could bug his ass. You know. But you know, those are little tidbits of information. You know, that a skull can tell you the things that might be different or maybe even similar.
Well, those skulls you're talking about were definitely in the dispensation of time when not ancient, but long ago and far away. But you know, not that far away because. You know, I told you to my Paiute Indian wrote history I've got from the Paiutes down there years ago, and I'm still writing about that in my own journal because I don't know where to go with it, but it's some kind of covert in some cases, but it has to do with the skulls in Nevada, and their story is that they're very, very dear to their heart and near in their memory. And so how far back is it really? It's just been several hundred years, which is relatively early. I mean, latecomers, and they were still here. And, the plaque they found in the Chinese plaque they found out the desert a while back here that I told you my friend interpreted for me. It absolutely tells you that they came here and explored the deserts in Nevada before Fremont and those people went across. And what they found out there, they don't give the Chinese or anybody else, Japanese or people who came here by ship long ago, any credit at all for this. But they deserve it because. Gavin Menzies' books bring that out about, 1421 and so on.
Well, Gavin Menzies, came across with some very convincing evidence about that.
Guy's a genius, man. He's a genius.
But, you know, he got a lot of flack from academia about it. And, you know, it's like somebody that wrote a book about Christopher Columbus discovering the Americas. And you go to him and say, sir, I want you to see this. I found where Chinese were here 500 years earlier.
Well, they went around the earth. You know the truth. They even found the Northwest
Passage. Right, right. He slits a couple of dollars in your hand and say, "Go get something to eat."
Oh yeah. You know? I mean, it's not the topic. We're getting off the camel, but up in northern Siberia for a few weeks of the year, in a very short time, enough water separates from the ice flow. The Chinese navigated around the entire continent of Russia all the way back to where they started from. And
yeah,
that was done so long ago that they had the word Northwest Passage in its interpretation. They never did find it again, but the whites didn't ever found it. Well, white men never found it. They did keep their mouth shut, but the Russians knew about it for a long time. And that was not a thing that they put out there to the world. It was Siberian, traders and trappers, whatever you want to say. But
they've known that the ice caps have not always been to the extent that they are. Now, they vary. They oscillate. Over the many hundreds of years,
go through Seattle up to Bering Sea and get the map out and go past Siberia, northern territories, and cut across there right into you can see where it goes toward Norway and Lapland.
Hey Don, do you know any Shakespeare?
Well, Shakespeare, yeah, a little bit. I can't quote it, but yeah.
I can quote it. This was sent to me by a friend named Derek from California. Who came across this in Othello, Act 1, Scene 3, and to him it meant something to him, and it may very well be. You wonder about, what people knew way back when, but the quote says, and it's written down here, it says, "Wherein of entrees, vast in deserts idle, Othello was telling the places he had been. Rough quarries, rocks and hills, and whose heads touch heaven, it was my hint to speak, such was the process, and of the cannibals that each other eat, and the anthropophagi, and men whose heads do grow beneath their shoulders." So I looked up anthropophagi, and if you look down at the bottom, as a picture I got off of Google, off a website, Googling it, and it's supposed to be a cannibalistic, primitive people that allegedly had their heads go down in their shoulders, and actually they show their features on their stomachs, which is, it's a myth. But like we all know, myths a lot of time are based on sometimes.
Maybe to explain that possibility of thinking that way, supposing you saw, always described, a lot of times, short-necked, two-legged creatures that are supposed to be Sasquatch. Now, a lot of times described as a shallow neck, including the Iceman of Wisconsin had that description by those guys. Anyway, the muscles spread out like Arnold's, way out there where a wrestler's neck, and this, of course, looks like a short neck. Well, if you put that guy looking at you at a certain angle, down low neck and broad shoulders and so on, some guy's imagination in a hurry with a spear might think that about something like that.
Well, what if they had long hair? You know, that.
Yeah.
Along with that, you know.
Absolutely, and hair can grow to lengths. I think it can be, who knows how long a person grows a hair and then kind of hide behind it somewhat, kind of like a folk. Yeah, I can see this. I mean, the Chinese have a legend in China, and this, of course, is what it is. It's a nonsense, but about an entity that has a facial face, and that it's right like a lantern looking at you. The face is right there, and it's got, you know, that's nonsense. But it has that, and so there's not too much, you know, Shakespeare was written by more than one person, I believe. It was a whole lot of geniuses writing the same book over your time, you know.
Well, maybe it was, but...
That's my opinion.
Genius, you know, considered to be like a great work.
Yeah, it's not people's history, in my opinion, so...
You know, there's a lot of internet banter. It's something, you know, you can almost... internet almost sucks information, like a vortex. And there's out on the internet and chatter and banter, you know, in amongst the genre of Bigfoot. You know,
they say that picture, Andy, that shows the Indians without identity on the 1870s, found by a freelance photographer and took a picture.
I don't have that up tonight.
Sometime future, bring it out here in the show because people should see that because it has the recurved bows and arrows, which are not conducive to the American West, and then the beards on the Indians. Now, this is something that was once photographed, and it was never put out there for anybody to really tie into it much, except the writings of Fremont.
Well, you know, back to the internet banner, Don. What's kind of going around now, and it's alleged. You don't really know positively what it is, but they say that there is a couple. There have been a couple, two Sasquatch that were shot and killed.
Oh, yeah.
Somewhere up there in Washington State, and that some of the DNA from the Sasquatch have made it to the DNA labs, and they have tested it, and they've run both mitochondrial and the other, and the mitochondrial, the quicker test, the mother side, the other being nuclear, says human.
And the father?
The father's is yet to remain. Don't know who the father is, but the mother.
That's interesting.
The mother human.
I have a question, MK. Is there a way to forensic that they can tell how old that flesh is?
I don't know, Don, but
beyond a reasonable time that they could tell was years old or days old or hours or months or long time, like, you know.
Now, I understand that this is alleged, you know, internet banter, but it may be true. And if it were to be true, I mean, what possibilities does, what does it mean to you, Don?
Well, it may, you know, that just off the top of my head, if anybody kills something known to be human or realized to be human, there has to be a crime committed somehow, isn't there?
Well, if...
Even though it's, unless it's just self-defense or... There's alternatives here, but yeah, if I had, I would never shoot something I didn't know what it was. But if I did, and it happened to turn out human, I'd have to have a good story to verify why it was ever killed. If it's a human attribute, looking that well, human, like the Iceman in comparison, I'm putting that out in front because they have pictures of his face. For goodness sake, whoever shot him in the back of the head must have seen something in his countenance that was definitely up for grabs. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they shot in the back of the head, I understand, and then in the chest, and then broke one arm. Nice, man.
Yeah, and just even when he's laying in that wrist for him from memory, he had his hand over his face trying to ward off what's coming next, probably, I guess.
Now, take the Iceman and strip off a couple of big nice, not-sized chunks to test, and you send it off, and it tests human.
Yeah.
What would be done there? I mean, what, did you commit a crime?
Well, that sounds like it. Done it to you?
Well, I don't know. I would think it would be a matter for the authorities. But what if the authorities...
self-defense?
Well, I mean, you got that option. In Mississippi, you can defend yourself. I mean,
well,
all you got to do is feel
threat. One thing, shot in the back of the head, the back of the head.
That's kind of hard to explain. Yeah, that's kind of hard.
Part of the head, maybe. I can see where, you know, I've been 100, and I understand. And you don't just shoot something in the back of the head unless you're pretty sure it's going away from you behind the ear or elk or something, you know?
Well, I guess I'm driving at. It's the moral of the story. And if for anybody that's out there looking in whatever manner they are.
Where'd the meat come from, huh?
Where's the meat? But
Where's the beef?
If you shoot something, be absolutely certain that you're not shooting a human. What kind of person would you be if you shot a human, knowing it was a human?
That's why I asked the question earlier on.
If the law came and got you, you would be getting what you deserved, wouldn't you?
Yes, well, I asked a question, MK, a while ago about the age of determining meat or flesh, because what if there's a superimposed story now, and that Iceman disappeared, as I understand, I don't know where he went to, what happened to him. Now, if he's declared at that time absolute was what he was, decaying flesh or whatever, it's still accessible for DNA assumptions. Well, what would happen if that was kept on ice, call it that way, for all this time, 40 years plus, and then all of a sudden it comes out to a story, and it's determined to come from another source other than the recent kill of supposedly a mother and child. Well, I'm just guessing all this, because in the writings of Sanders, in that writing zero is our article, he says that this creature was about six feet tall. This is a Iceman of Wisconsin, and it said in there that he's called the ice child rather than the Iceman, because he weighs 250 pounds. The weight was so, immature creature, and fully grown wasn't necessarily, according to what one assumption might be that way.
Well, what I'm saying is, if you shoot something, you say, I shot this Sasquatch, and this Sasquatch tests out human. You know, where is the law?
Where's the fear factor, too?
Don't we have a law against shooting humans?
Yeah, well, I'd say it'd be a crime of some kind, if you less of self-defense.
Unless you didn't really do it.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, unless you just were saying you did it and you didn't really do it. There's a lot of samples, you know, that float around nowadays. You can get DNA off of the follicle of a hair, you know. But when you get a couple of pieces of meat off of a body and they test human, that warrants some questioning.
Well, yeah, it does. If you're on a jury, what would you think about this, you know? You couldn't have any preempting on it at all. You have to make the decision off the cold turkey. You're going to have to look at the thing pretty hard.
Well, it depends on, you know, usually if the lawmen of our country, of the different states, do their job, they'll at least go ask you some questions. And if they found out that you were just kidding, those two slabs of meat came from another sample, some time ago, then at least they ought to go and ask where that was, because it tested human.
Yeah, I just, myself, personal opinions, I smell a rat somewhere here. I don't know what kind of rat it is, but that's something not quite right in the whole darn thing. I mean, the way it's being handled, and it's so covert, no one's telling the truth, and some people got stories out there, hearsay, and you know, I don't know a thing about what's going on there, but if you have to question initially, what would I do? It'd be possibly some kind of crime if someone shot something, unless you could verify why.
If I killed what was possessing this skull right here, this skull found in a cave, I found a modern-day example of it, shot it and killed it. And, you know, brutish as it looked and ugly as it looked, it tested to be human. You know?
Yeah.
I'm in trouble.
Well, just take Patty, for example. If you could see her like we see her in pictures all this by now, and even the hair removed like you've shown on your illustrations and so on. And I got to ask you real quickly, just to my mind. Do you remember back in 2007, was it? I made a sculpture in your house. We worked together. I made a sculpture of Patty's face according to from the TV, from the things you had there to show me on. And I got conclusive to what possibility on her face a little bit, and is now coming about to be almost like that. Well, in the writings about the Iceman, today I found it when I was reading about him a little bit. He determined that the nose was plugged. you remember I made that same pug nose on Patty before?
Yeah, you sure did.
And that's been 5 years ago or so. I never even knew that till I seen this today, and I was writing about this little article here about that little mop-up on it. But if that's possible, I got so lucky to sculpture that on that sculptor with a pug nose on Patty somewhat, and then they developed in there the same way, but still humanistic. Wow, I really felt kind of elevated today a little bit, you know?
Well, you know, if you take an Iceman, now the Iceman is kind of funny because some very skilled people went to see it early on. That knew what something. I mean, Ivan Sanderson looked at it and examined it. Bernard Hooverman. These people were PhDs, and they said that you could smell the putrefaction coming through the ice. You could see juices from the eye filtering through the ice where the eye was dangling out of its socket from being blasted in the back of the head.
He said both eyes were out.
One was out and hanging, and the other was out but still in place.
That's right.
So you could still see the eye in the socket, you know, in front of the socket. It was, you know, they were absolutely convinced. And later on, after a couple of trips to Canada, they start circulating a version of it that didn't look the same.
They must replace it.
Right, you did. It was no putrefaction that you could smell. There was no juices filtering through the ice. None of that. It didn't even look the same. And somebody substituted a latex corpse.
Do you recall the part of that article that told about how they determined the ice being relatively new because it was artificially done because the blood was still aching out of the corpse from
it? Right, and it partially thawed. It partially thawed from leaving a light bulb on top of that glass.
Yeah, hello.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Good. Okay, I said it partially thawed out because they left a light bulb on top of the glass. And that made some of the smell come through the crack. Cracked the glass because they put some hot beverages, hot coffee on top of it, and it cracked. So they could smell the putrefaction, you know, just come through there. It was the smell was just awful.
Before the days of fishbowl repair, I guess.
Yeah, so the next time it starts making the rounds, it's been substituted and changed and everything. But, you know, somebody, if it did get swapped, if that's the case, and then where did it go? Where did the original one go?
Well, I think it's vanished till now, if it's ever out there anywhere we find it. I don't know where it went.
Well, say somebody has kept it for 40 years, frozen. And now we're in the world of DNA, and they're wondering, maybe, if they could possibly introduce a piece of this back to the DNA people and see
what... That's exactly why I asked the question. Could it be possible to determine how many years ago this flesh comes about, or months, or years, or hours?
Right, that's what I'm saying. If you get a sample submitted, maybe they should test for the age of the sample. I wonder if they're foolish. To see if somebody's telling them the truth about the origins of it. Did it really come from something 2 weeks ago, or did it come from something a couple of decades ago, four decades ago?
You remember in the article by Sanderson, he said, too, I remember this, he says, it's in the article, on the first page of the article. He said, "What this is has been alive within the last 5 years," and that was 1969. Subtract 5 from that, it's a simple matter, going back about the time of 94, or 5 or 6 or 7.
Not 94, 64.
Yeah, 64. I'm going to say 64, 5 or 6 or 7, even and 8, and of course 9. Within the last 5 years, within the word goes a long ways with within. That could be 6 months ago or 6 years ago, for that matter, you know, for 5 months. What I'm saying is it possible that, well, anyway, what do they get determined if they did have that kind of flesh available? And the question is, where did it go? Absolutely, where did it go?
I will say this, that to anybody who might own the Iceman in a clandestine way, you know, beware of the world of DNA. DNA don't ever go away. And
if you're about to find out if a person's getting to a, older age, like, you know, they want to know what they had one time in a trap, you know, a muskrat or whatever it was, and you want to see what it was a little different. They had an ice for 40 years. Before he dies, he might want to spend the money to find out.
Did you know that, Don, that they sprayed luminol on the top floor of this building where Billy the Kid had killed somebody? And you know they picked up the blood stain? It was over 100 years old, even though it had been cleaned up for 100 years.
Well, that's a new thing, man. That's something else, isn't it?
Yeah, the chemical reactions with the enzymes were in the wood from the blood.
Wow. That is,
soaked it up. And they were able to determine, correct some history, where the history had him dying at the bottom of the stairs. They were able to correct it, say that he had actually been killed at the top. So we live in a very modern world.
The time has come when the people in France and the craft could put together the right bones.
if you got old bones, DNA may be, you know, tell us a few things. The fellow that's got this skull, I don't know if he's still alive. I'd like to contact him and see. But if he is and he's got this skull, maybe DNA might be the thing to do. Maybe already done. Maybe he did it and didn't get any results, or didn't get...
One more time, if you don't mind me taking a minute. I want to remind the people out there who heard the show before, I think twice or three times I've asked to help us find that, remove that skull that's missing from the museum in Nevada, the Sitka skull. One of them, we had pictures of it in the last year, but before, they showed on this program, these tapes you can get, the Ancient Aliens, they show three in the same room, the same ones. I got a picture in my hands right now, one of them, to verify that I ever went there once, I've talked to the curator a lot of times about these skulls. And one was missing down there. And so who's got that one now, and why?
Oh, well, Don, you know, those things are not on display. And the reason they're not on display...
No, I know. That's why I was saying, where to go?
They don't really want to, you know, give them back and have them reburied. I would imagine people check them in, check them out, people with academic credentials.
Yeah, I should be. I'm going down not too long from now and check it out again, right to the horse's mouth, so I can find out about the teeth.
Well, I'd ask Pansy Lee. You know, that'd be the person to ask.
Well, I know her real well. I go there in a heartbeat and get to find out about who got it, if you tell me. But her eyes are tied, too. You can't pressure people like that. But they got academics and all kind of license, you know, we haven't got.
Maybe, you know, this is all interesting stuff, you know, and so, we, you know, I hope tonight's show was in some way enlightening, you know, kind of explored, you know, where are the bones and these bones. Well, sometimes things are in hiding in plain sight.
You're summing up the whole thing to say that, well, and I'm saying this too, possibly a crime was committed if they killed something and didn't have to. I mean...
That's allegedly.
Yeah, allegedly.
The laws that we have enforced in this land are to protect all the citizens, and a citizen is people who are born here. And if you got homo in front of your name and your description of who you are or what you are, you're a citizen of the United States. You know, if somebody plugs you because you don't look just right or look a little gruesome.
All right, there are many people out in the radio audience, radio world, to call in once in a while. We talk, but we like to have your input sometimes, and we don't get too much of it.
Now, on the other hand, you have a right to protect yourself if you feel threatened. Also, if you're sure that it's not a human, if you're sure you're not looking at a human, if you kill an animal, it should be real easy to verify that it's an animal with the same type test, and there ain't nothing wrong with that, you know?
Well, that's right.
It save a lot of steps as far as discovery of what these things are. But what we're looking for there in that cave in Oregon, that skull there, that's definitely of a homo something. And
let me check one thing here. Any seasoned hunter, I don't mean just a weekend, once a year guy running out there, beard back pocket. I mean a guy who's really hunting, sees even a bear or anything, and he's going to have a little humanity to him to make sure he gets a clean shot. If he's really a seasoned hunter, and anybody out there looking for those things out there, and that my mindset would be looking pretty hard with the pulling trigger on the back of the head. You know, you got to be pretty precise to get that bullet done.
Well, yeah. And if from the back of the head, how do you really know? I mean, if something's walking upright.
But turn to run, what you going to do? Are you going to shoot it because you... Anyway, I don't... back shooting is my thing.
You know, just be careful. I mean, I mean, most people have good sense. Most people who've hunted know the rules of hunting. Don't shoot what you're not sure of. And if you do shoot something, you know, and you're sure that it's not a human being, then you, it's okay. But, you know, don't shoot something that's got a skull like we got up here, you know, because that's going to be problematic. And if whoever shoots anything out there, if it tests human, they should be in trouble. Or either the law is not doing their job.
Yeah, like I say, it's my opinion is not that they, a lot of law enforcement people nowadays, I'm not against the police, but a lot of them out there seem to enforce their ego trip more than they do the law.
Well, I tell you what,
it's far in serious matters, you know.
And just imagine somebody killed somebody, shot somebody kin to you, close to you, and they wouldn't refuse to acknowledge it. They wouldn't do anything.
Most police officers are abound and they're good men out there determined to do a good job, but there's those out there who... On the highways, I just can't believe what they do to people out there.
You don't have the police don't have the right to roll their eyes and say, oh, not another one of those. You know, like people do about Sasquatch, you know, and you turn it in.
Mm-hmm.
If you turn in a piece of meat and it tests human and you call it a Sasquatch, they don't have the right to roll their eyes at it. If it tests human, they are under moral and legal laws to do their job and go and ask questions, investigate it. If they don't do it, then we live in a world, a society that's going to be total anarchy. You know, we depend on the laws and the police to enforce them. So, you know, that's all.
Yeah, it's better be judged by a jury of 12 than carried by 4. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. If you didn't do anything wrong, you didn't. You know, if it tests human, my gosh. At least
it's an open question. We got to get some answers to this in time. It's right around the corner, I'm sure, if somebody gets on it.
So, you know, that's just the internet banter, so it's alleged. Everything's alleged.
I'm glad I haven't got an internet. I tell you, I really am glad I haven't got one.
Well,
I've got time to worry.
I mean, we're on an internet show, Don. Don't forget that.
I mean, that I haven't got one to get tied up on. I mean, get in there. I can't even get time to answer any email if I ever got one.
The internet's both good and bad. And, you know,
yeah, it's
depends
it's
on
magic,
the
actually.
Well, I tell you what, you watch artists first, you're gonna get a lot of good stuff.
Well, what I didn't let it have an email, you know that stuff.
And if there's nothing else on the internet of any quality, artists first is, you know, that's reason enough to keep a computer.
Well, I really admonish Artists First for their help. I can't thank Scott and Tony K enough for letting us get on here and air our views a little bit.
We're glad to have you, gentlemen. Also, for listeners that don't realize this yet, we are now offering a brand new separate MP3 signal. So those of you with smartphones can easily pick us up. And those of you that want to tune in on your iPhone or your Droid, etc. Gentlemen, we are out of time for this month. MK, it's great to have you back. We missed you for a couple months there.
Well, I tell you what, I've had a pretty busy schedule, but right now I'm off work with my back. I've got a bulging disc sitting on my spinal cord, and it's giving me a lot of grief, but I've been taking some medicine there to keep the pain down, and thank goodness, for chemicals, you know.
Yeah, maybe a couple of my friends can come down and help you out, Mr. Jack Daniels and Mr. Jim Beam.
Yeah, well, Right.
I.W. Harper.
They'll get you through the bad times sometimes.
Yes, they will. Guys, we got the news coming our way in 45 seconds. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in to Bigfoot Central. That's Dem K, Davis, and Don Monroe. As always, an intellectual
program. Merry Christmas.
Very well done, guys.
Thank you. Night, everybody.